Glen Tui Farms.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I'm Howard Boyd. I'm the owner and director of Glen Tui Farms, which is a family farm. As many of you probably know, we farm in the upper Aparima area in Dunnoggin Valley, and my father took up 120 hectares of rabbit-infested land on the banks of the Aparima in 1944 after leaving the Air Force. At that stage, it supported 40 sheep and thousands of rabbits, which he made a living off for about 3 years. Then he moved into Chewing's Fescue, which gave us a shot in the arm, and from then on we managed to acquire neighbouring properties and move from fescue to sheep and beef. And in 87 we converted a block into a dairy. Glen Tui now is 2,000 hectares and runs about 18,000 stock units. Most of the land we've developed over that period of time out of native blocks and running out pasture. We still have tussock blocks and stands of native scrub and bush left for riparian areas and stock shelter. We've lived along the Aparima River all my life and seen the floods come and go and put up with droughts as you do in Mossman, and seen the nor'west blow and the Dunrobin Plains and a cloud of dust blowing down the gully. Our property now consists of four separate blocks exceeding 300 hectares. The dairy block is 400 hectares of irrigated dairy platform between the Waterloo and the Dunrobin Road. The irrigation water comes from the Aparima River at high flows and is stored in a 14-day storage pond, which gives us flexibility when the river is low. The second block, which we've just got consent to start milking in 2018 on for another dairy farm that my son is on Mutton Road. It's in the process of being converted with just a shed to be built now, and we're probably going to once a day milk on that property just to keep things to the impact on the land to a minimum. The 620 Dunrobin Hill block across the river from the homestead is not fully developed. We've developed a large chunk of the hill which was infested with gorse when we got it in 2001, and we've left probably 200 hectares which is oversown tussock land, which was done in Bernard Pinney's time in 1973 under the subsidies that were running at the time by the government. That block has it's only grazed I use in the summertime after weaning, and about 150 cows, so it's very lightly stocked. The fourth block is on the Waddle, up the end of the Waddle Road, that used to be part of Waterloo Station, and we got that in 76. It was mainly just tussock and scrub and a couple of paddocks which were developed at the time. We run that as sheep and beef and dairy support. In support of my submission, which now seems a wee bit irrelevant, what I've been hearing at this hearing process, I'd like to comment on the 50 hectare winter crop with cropping. At present, we crop about 150 to 200 hectares of land for winter grazing, and this, as I point out, is just under 10% of our total land area. And as we have four separate blocks, most of them are 3K apart, I don't see why they should all be lumped under one umbrella. Our cropping regime usually is beet or chow swedes. Then we usually follow with a cereal crop for supplement, using oats and usually mowata, which is taken and then grazed in the following winter, which seems to get us through. Having just finished putting a farm plan together with Environment South and staff, I feel that farmers would be more receptive to adopting a code of best practice in conjunction with Environment South and staff rather than having set limits. Having done several different water and land use consents over the last few years, I'd be hesitant to want any more consenting processes, as quite often it can be take some time and also can be costly. But in saying that, I now read that some consents might be able to cover 5 or 10 years, which wouldn't possibly be so bad.
Yeah.
The cultivation rule on slopes, I think, has been well documented, and I think it should really be just, instead of having set limits, I think it should be just left to best practice and part of your farm management plan with consultants with Environment South and staff. The use of spray and pay is what we have used to a small extent, mainly to eradication of gorse on hill blocks, and we only did the flatter areas with a bit of disking, and we used it mainly just to get rid of weed species and get grass established. I feel that with direct drilling and spraying, I think regrassing of the hills could be done that way rather than actual cultivation, which would probably be better for nutrient loss. Our family basically supports the water and land plan, but feels councils can be swayed by political and emotional sentiment. Any loss of profitability will impact on our local community, of which we employ 12 families. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Morris, any questions?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just looking at your written support, and you just had three things, Rule 23, Rule 25, and Rule 35.3, where you talk about the need for a suitably qualified person. I'm not sure if that's quite the right rule.
Well, I probably didn't get that quite right, no doubt. I'm only a layman.
I think it might be Rule 32.
Yeah, no, I just felt getting a bit over the top with these certified engineers running around everywhere. I think there's professional people out there that within the province and can do it, instead of get people coming down from Wellington all the time.
I really wanted to ask was who do you think is a suitably qualified person? What sort of qualifications should they
have? Well, we have engineers in the South and area that's quite up. I've used engineers for building two ponds so far.
Right.
And we've used clay from our off-air properties, and we've just got our 10-year consent renewed with our original dairy farm. It was all clay lined with clay that we've had tested, and it was proven to be satisfactory, and we've just done the drop test and there was no leakage from our storage pond. So even though with our new pond that we're building this coming year, we have said we'll use liners, but I've just talked to the engineers and they've found that some of the liners even leak too, so we might be better off with our original clay, to be honest. And we used clay in our big 6-hectare irrigation pond, and there's no sign of it leaking. So.
And we've been there.
You've been there, I heard you might be there. Yeah, no, I think it was okay. Yeah, no, it's good, but no, everything we've done has been good, but I would comment on the condition of the Aparima River. The only thing that I've really seen change over the years is the dirty mows arrived, of course, and there is a bit of giardia apparently. We do, I know the council takes a bit of samples at the Dunrobin Bridge, and I don't think there's been any adverse effect with E. coli in that at any stage. We actually drink that water all the time. So. I know we're not supposed to be, but we don't. But I do filter all the staff's houses, but I don't bother with myself. Yeah, survived so far. Yeah. But no, I can't I think we've been all trying to do best practice all our lives, basically. We might have got a bit carried away with development at one stage, but that was probably my father's fault, more than myself.
Well, we had a look at your pond on the trip. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Currently it says, storage being certified as structurally sound by a chartered professional engineer. That's the proposed, that was the change. Does that sound okay?
Yeah. I know that with the new pond, we've got to get a chartered engineer to tip it off, even though I'm using the local engineers. He's still got to get him down to tip it off.
Right. And that's okay?
Well, I suppose it'd be okay, but it's just another cost, isn't it?
Okay. Less costs
we've got, the better, I reckon.
Right, just a minute.
Good morning. Just good morning. In terms of your recent drop test,
yes.
Was there any difficulty getting that completed? Or?
Yeah, it's just the wind can upset things. They took it for over 3 days and they just used 2 days of that test period. I think it did, it was basically just evaporation is what we lost, is what they said. So, yeah, it was a new experience for me too. So. It was just timing really, you just had to get it right so you didn't actually have rain. Well, they had rain gauges there to allow for that, but it was just a timing one really. And you had to do it when you weren't actually putting effluent in, of course. So just a bit of timing involved really. Yeah.
In terms of spray and pray, what percentage of your wintering?
It'd be only 2% possibly. Away totally, 2 or 3%. No, we don't use it that often now. It was just to clean up that horsey block that we had. But it's just when you go back to renew those grasses, what are you going to do? Because I think from what myself and my neighbours have been doing, we've got pretty good direct drills, and I think we're finding that's probably the best way to go, rather than, because a lot of that country's got very limited topsoil on it, and the more you stir it up, the more rocks you're going to bring up. So. It's not ideal. Yeah. And a lot of those blocks, unless you really feed them with fertiliser, it's probably not cost effective to be. Once you've got the grasses established, I think you just got to get a hell of a good response for the first 3 years, and then it sort of dies off and the native grasses creep back in. So it's not something you want to be relying on too much. It's just to keep the weeds under control and somewhere to go certain times a year. So I think as part of a bigger operation, those hill blocks, instead of being hammering the hell out of them, just use them sparingly, and just as a bolt hole now and again. So we operate it anyway.
Thanks for having
no questions. Yes, there's a couple. Given you have four blocks and about 200 hectares, up to 200 hectares for a winter grazing, have you talked to the staff of the years about your own situation and whether you would need a consent or not going forward?
I talked to who staff? More staff?
Environment South and staff.
Dave Knight was out doing the plan, and well, I understand this from reading the documents that I've got at this stage, because we're all sort of under the same management basically.
And in your interpretation, when do you think you would need that consent by?
Well, I understand it'll be this coming winter, because the beetle will go in October and we'll feather it off next year, I think.
Can I just suggest that you talk to the staff and get that clarified? Just moving on, I take it from your comments in Rule 25 that you would like a bit more clarification around cultivation and spray and pray, even though you have used a little bit, but to get some clarity around those different techniques.
Yes, well, a lot of people interpret it totally different, don't they?
Right, so from your point of view, you'd like a bit more clarification?
Yes, that would be right there. Yeah.
It's almost too
No further questions from me. Thanks very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you for your time.